Hi there. I'm Michael Clark, and he's Mike Pereira. Together, we're the hosts of Mid-Credit Scene, a podcast about movies. And this is a Mid-Credit Minute, kind of bonus mini-episode where we talk about big important things, like snacks, double features, and more.
Let's talk about those questions you asked your guests. I loved the last one where you asked the guest about the double feature question.
Yeah.
And they paired up Jurassic Park with Jaws. I thought, that's brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, that stage pre-Jurassic Park Steven Spielberg is a mode, and post-Jurassic Park Spielberg is a mode. You can divide his career kind of quite easily between those two. And Jaws and Jurassic Park are excellent examples of movies, both of a filmmaker figuring out what he wants to do with the next stage of his career, and also a movie inadvertently completely changing the entire industry around it. Because Jaws invented the summer blockbuster, and so we have everything that we have now to blame for Jaws. And then Jurassic Park introduced the idea that you could use computers to do things that you couldn't do on set. And so I think there are so many layers to that combination of films that work so well together. But yes, the question that we always pose is, if you could program a double feature, what two movies would you choose and why? And then we had some wonderful insight from the former manager of the Apollo Theater, Cara, who told us that double features actually suck from a like ticket selling point of view. But it's still a great thought experiment because it gets you to think about what sort of films you like, what films work well together. And we've had some really weird answers, which is great because I like a weird answer. I like it when you when someone comes to it and they're like, I'm going to play these two movies. And on the surface, these two movies have absolutely nothing to do with one another. But actually, there's like this great undercurrent.
I liked when John Johnson pitched Point Break and Fast and the Furious because he's like, it's the same movie.
Oh, that's actually fabulous.
Like they're the same movie. It's just swap out surfboards for cars.
Yeah.
Done. I was like, but that was like, Kara was like, curating a double feature is tricky because you don't want to do two movies that are essentially the same movie or like too similar. Like you want there to be thematic similarities while not actually making people like they've just sat through the same movie twice. Yeah. Right. So that's always fascinating to see what people's answers are. And people struggle with it more than I thought they would.
Yeah.
When we ask them, what do you guys think?
You want to go first?
Yeah. So the pairing for me is, it includes one, my favorite movie of all time, right? And then the second movie is a sequel many, many years down the road that I never imagined could deliver in this way. The second one also, I heard Vincent Marconi of My Pet Skeleton and Johnny Hollow describe as calming and very easy to watch. Yeah. And the two movies are, so The Shining, right? Mm-hmm. And then Dr. Sleep, which is a gorgeous, beautiful movie.
I love Dr. Sleep.
A continuation
Sleep.
Of Danny Torrance's life now as an adult. And I haven't seen either of them ever in a theater, and I thought that'd probably be a dream pairing for me is to see those two.
Oh, that's
and,
really cool.
And they're very different movies too, right? I think a lot of it has to do with the passage of time as well and how far theater has come. But The Shining to me, I've watched it countless times, and it takes me right into the Overlook Hotel, and I can just disappear in there. And I think it also started for me a lifelong fascination with carpet patterns.
Mm.
So much so that I've been to Las Vegas three times. I'm actually always like mesmerized by the the patterns and the I could just
they're designed.
I could be there forever. Yeah, yeah. Like I'm mesmerized by them. You know what I mean? And I'm certain it has to do with the carpets and the hallways of of the Overlook.
It's like someone's job, right?
Yep.
To pick those out.
Yeah.
Keep you in there.
Dr. Sleep is an exceptional film. I didn't see it in theaters. Because it got bad reviews and I don't know, there was maybe something else that I wanted to see more that weekend, and then I watched it when it came out on video and I was blown away by it. And then going back to E.T., one scene wonder, the actor whose name I still can't conjure up out of my brain, but who played Elliot in E.T., plays
like Matt
Jack
Greenberg.
Torrance in one scene and is not doing a Jack Nicholson impersonation, and yet somehow is Jack Nicholson in that scene. And it is such a wonderful like masterclass of acting, of like, here is an actor embodying a mode and a mindset, and just a little bit of makeup, complete transformation.
Henry Thomas. Yeah. As soon as I saw it, I was like, I know.
It was one of those things. I was like, I'm going to hear it. I'm like,
I know. Yes. Yeah, of course we know.
Yeah.
The two first names, I always forget, like Marshall Ward. I always forget. Mike Clark. You forget the two first names. Okay, my two movies. I'm cheating a little bit. I didn't really think about other people. I thought selfishly about myself only. The question was for me. It wasn't for anyone else. Exactly. I will say quickly, I don't read any movie reviews at all or album reviews. I've gotten
out of that habit.
It's ruined things for me in the past. And I also have met people along the road who wrote those things and thought, that was your opinion?
I say this as a someone who has a newsletter where I write movie reviews. Yeah. I don't read movie reviews.
Yeah, I don't see the value in them at all. Yeah. I don't count the tomatoes, whether they're rotten or good.
Yeah.
I don't even know which one's good. Are getting the Rotten Tomatoes good, or is it just
a tomato is good?
A tomato is good. Yeah,
the green splat is bad.
Green splat is bad.
But
anyone can go on there and just type out their opinion and rate it. Yeah,
I am of the opinion that there's no such thing as good movies and bad movies. Movies are art. Art is subjective.
Exactly.
It speaks to you.
Yeah.
If it speaks to you, then wonderful. It speaks to you.
Okay. So we'll see if you'll come to my double feature, which is the Philadelphia Story, which is a George Cukor movie, and an episode of Twilight Zone, which is an occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge, which is it's almost like a movie. It's longer. It has a full story. Yeah. The reason why is I don't often get to watch black and white movies. And these two movies are visually gorgeous to me. I couldn't even sit here and tell you the plot of both of them clearly at this moment anymore, but I just love watching them. They're beautiful to watch. So those are my movies.
The original Twilight Zone is a lot of where like the visual language of the next like 30 years of filmmaking came from, especially anything that has to do with suspense. Mm-hmm. All of those episodes are just time capsules of perfection.
Yeah.
Like the influence of that is impossible to overstate, right? Like, I mean, the stories that it came up with, the fact of how many like people have actually retold just those individual stories, but then the ones that it inspired, the thought experiments that people have done around it with things like Black Mirror, and the visual style and
someone like Jordan Peele, who clearly loves the Twilight Zone enough that he brought it back. But like, you watch his movies and you're like, he just soaked in the Twilight Zone, and he understood like they were working on shoestrings. They were on small stages. They had no money. They had no budget.
Limited time.
And they made these wonderful, tense stories. And you can see that he's behind the camera and he's like, I've got millions more than they do, but I am not going to behave in any way differently. Like, I'm still going to pretend like I'm just on a soundstage with Burgess Meredith, you know?
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm rewatching Futurama right now, and they keep having the recurring thing of like, you know, the scary door, which is like, they're like crappy Twilight Zone ripoff.
That's so good. But you know, timeless.
Yeah.
There, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a good double feature.
Yeah.
Thank you. Like, come to my double feature. Absolutely. This is what it's going to be.
For me, the greatest thing I take away from the original Twilight Zone is it speaks so much to me about longing for a time passed by. You know what I mean? Like, wondering if you can go back to a place that you hold in your heart and find a piece of you that you think is long gone.
Talk about revisiting something and finding a hidden meaning in it. You watch those Twilight Zone episodes and you're like, yeah, this was like 9 really sad men writing these stories, like Matheson and Sterling and all of the writers who worked on that show. You're like, they lived through the war and they don't see like a bright light at the end of the tunnel, and they're just writing their misery into metaphor, and they're not even being that subtle about it most of the time, and it's just so achingly beautiful.
Marshall often says the episodes are just little lessons in morality.
Yeah, little black and white morality plays, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Similar to the EC horror comics of the 50s. It was kind of like, if you do bad things, hopefully something your end is not good too. And if you're going to be a grave robber or whatever, you know?
One of my favorite episodes is The Box, where they then they adapted it into a feature film, and the movie didn't make that much money, I think, because it was a hard pitch, because they're like, here's a box and what's going to happen, and the trailer tried to make it look like it was going to be an action film.
Was that Southern? Richard Southern, who did Donnie Darko?
It was, yeah. His like third film after like 15 years after Donnie Darko. But it's like the film gets it right in that it is just a meditation. Mm-hmm. Like they resist the urge to turn it into an action film or anything like that. It is just a human meditation. And that's not the sort of movie that makes money when it came out, which I think was like 2014 or something like that. But it's just, yeah, let's talk about the morality of pushing this button. Mm-hmm. And then think about what that button actually represents. And it's timeless. You can watch that. Climate change button done. Like,
yeah, I love those kinds of movies. I love those kinds of things. And that's why I think one of the reasons they are so timeless is because they get into these sort of like little morality tales about the human condition and provoke that, like, how would you respond question? Like, you know, you get yourself thinking about if I were in that situation. And because a lot of the times they're starting from a very grounded position of like, yeah, it's not that difficult to see yourself at the starting point in some mm-hmm. way.
Yeah,
for sure.
And they very quickly start to chip away at what you are comfortable with and not, where your comfort levels are, right?
Twilight Zone broke my brain as a kid. Yeah. In that the sorts of stories that I respond most positively to are ones with downer or ambiguous endings. Mm-hmm. If something has an ambiguous ending, I immediately like give it an extra star in my head. And it's just because the number of episodes of The Twilight Zone that ended with like, I remember this distinct feeling of like watching Twilight Zone episodes, turning the TV off and having a sense in my stomach that I could not grapple with. And I realize now that's existentialism.
Yep.
exactly. But I didn't have that word. It's like, that dread. And it's like, why am I carrying this around for like, a day afterwards? Like, why am I being introspective all of a sudden? It was like, you're contemplating morality and mortality. Yep. Welcome to 12. Well.
To hear more, listen to Mid-Credit Scene Podcast on Midtown Radio or wherever you get your podcasts.